welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and this hour, Drama. Later on, we hear Nightbeat with Frank Lovejoy from 1952, but right now it's a CBS broadcast of suspense called Dead Man's Story. This first heard on May 15th, 1960.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in... Dead Man's Story, written for Suspense by Robert Arthur. The time, late on a foggy night. The place, a room on New York's west side near the docks, where the faint hooting of foghorns comes in the window. Lying on the bed, a man listens to them and knows that beyond those walls, windows, and locked door, 10,000 men of the New York City police force are looking for him. Then comes a knock on the door, which means life or living death.
I'd like to ask you a question. Have you ever been in a shipwreck and drowned at sea? No, I don't expect you to answer that. But just in case you're wondering, I can tell you it's a very interesting experience. My name... Larry King. My record, one term at Sing Sing, one term at Plattsburgh, one term at Auburn Prison. 3 terms, all for acquiring sums of money that weren't legally mine, making me a 3-time loser. A very uncomfortable position to be in, especially since there was a 4th charge against me and I was hiding out, quite broke and without much hope, when she came to my rescue, as she had so often before.
Larry, it's Julia,
come in quickly. How'd you find me?
He phoned me. Oh, Larry, why did you do it?
Very good question. Just a bad habit, I guess.
But you promised.
I never was very good at keeping promises, was I?
Well, this time you'll be sentenced for life.
Now, that's occurred to me, Julia. But you shouldn't have come here.
I couldn't leave you here to be caught.
You always turn up when I need you, Julia. Why?
Because I remember the good things about you, not the bad. The good things about our 4 years together.
It's time you thought of yourself now. Your present husband, a bank executive. He wouldn't like to know that you still come to my help.
I can't help it. You'll have to get out of the country. I'll raise some money, sell some of my jewels. Steve will help me find a freighter captain who'll take you to South America. Will you let me do this one last thing for you, Larry?
Yes, Julia. And I promise not to come back. Three days later, Julia got a message to me. I slipped out and met her down by the docks. We went on board and... Captain led us down a corridor.
This way. Be very quiet.
Yes, of course.
This is the cabin. You have the money?
This envelope. $2,100 bills.
Old bills. Good. We sail in 5 minutes.
Oh, baby. This is it. It was never any good at saying goodbye.
I know. It doesn't matter. Here's a passport. Your name is Charles Riker now. And here's $3,000, all I could raise.
You won't get into trouble about the jewelry?
No. Tom will never notice it's gone.
Julia.
Yes?
You know, in spite of everything, I want you to know that there was never anyone else for me but you.
Larry.
That's it, Julia?
Yes. Of course. Goodbye, Larry. Goodbye.
Goodbye, sweetheart.
An hour later, from the porthole of my cabin, I could see the lights of Manhattan fading away. I had nothing to do but wait.
The ocean rolled away behind us. The weather grew milder. And on the 17th day, we entered a Honduran port. As soon as we docked, I met the captain on deck.
Are you ready to go ashore, senor?
Ready as I'll ever be.
You have a passport?
I have a passport. I am not expecting trouble.
One hopes not, but it is easy to be sure, senor.
How?
The customs officer is my friend. For $1,000, I can guarantee no trouble.
You can you? And if I don't pay off, you might just tip a word to the customs officer?
No, senor, I did not say that.
And maybe the money would wind up in your pocket? I smell a rat, and it's you.
It is a mistake to speak to me this way. We should be friends.
Friends? Listen, you're chiseler. You're not putting the squeeze on me. You see what I have in my pocket?
God, senor, I warn
you. I'm warning you. We're walking down that gangplank together. If things go smoothly, fine. If they don't, I'll shoot.
You would not dare.
It wouldn't be any worse for me than returning to the States to face life imprisonment. In fact, the idea of shooting you rather appeals to me.
The senor makes a very funny joke. There will be no trouble.
There wasn't any trouble. Half an hour later, I had a tiny room in a fourth-rate hotel, hot as a baker's oven, and was stretched out on a sagging bed, listening to bad mambo music and staring at the cracks, spiders, and flies in the ceiling. This was freedom. But I was already beginning to wonder if it wasn't overrated. As the weeks went by, I wondered more. The food, if anything, was better at Sing Sing. I couldn't work, you see. I couldn't leave. I couldn't do anything except save my money and see how long I could hold out. This might have gone on for a year if it hadn't been for my visitor one evening. Come in. Oh, I thought it was a houseboy. Afraid you got the wrong room, mister.
I don't think so, King. I'm Lieutenant Sanders of the New York Police.
Oh, you sure you got the right party?
I was never more sure of anything.
How'd you find me?
An anonymous letter a couple of weeks ago. Somebody who couldn't write English very well.
Yeah, that figures. But suppose I say I'm not going back with you.
I have the extradition papers. In the end, you'll have to go. How'll you have it, easy or hard?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm tired of this place. Have a drink. That cop Sanders wasn't a bad guy. I spent a day showing him the sights. Then we went aboard the freighter SS Port Royal, loaded with bauxite ore, and shipped back to the States. After a week, we put in at Caymanera, Cuba, to load deck cargo. Next morning, we weighed anchor and started through the Windward Passage. It was then, with New York the next stop, that I really began to wonder if I'd done the right thing in giving in so easily.
Well, it's time to turn in. Want a nightcap?
No, thanks.
All right, put out your left hand.
What for?
I'm handcuffing you to the bunk.
Why? Where would I go?
I've been a cop long enough to know what a prisoner is thinking. We're in the Bahama Channel now, passing one island after another. It wouldn't be too tough to cut a life raft loose.
You got me all wrong.
I'm playing it safe. Put out your hand.
Oh, now look, Lieutenant.
What's wrong? That's the emergency signal.
Look out, Lieutenant. The boat's coming back. Sanders.
My chest. See if you can lift the bunk off my chest.
Sure. Just hang on.
Trouble. They're abandoning ship.
Now, take it easy. I'll help you. Up from under there in a minute.
Oh, so are you. My legs are pinned. Ship's sinking. Deck's sinking already.
I'll get help.
What is it? What's wrong?
The door. I can't open it. It's jammed.
Try breaking it down. Hurry.
I can't break it. It's metal.
Well, try yelling.
Help! Help! We're in cabin two, help!
There's no answer. Everyone's getting on the ship back.
There go the lights. Ooh, see the blitzing? We're going down fast. Must have ripped the big hole in it.
Help! Get us out of here! Get us out!
No use. They've all gone. Notice how quiet it is.
Yes.
We're below the surface. We're going down now to the bottom. Feel the pressure on your ears?
We can't be going down yet. There's no water in here. We're still breathing.
Then the ship must hold an air pocket. That's the only reason we aren't dead. But we're living on borrowed time.
Later, we were still alive. We shouldn't have been, but we were. The deck slanted at a 35-degree angle, and everything was completely silent, except for the beating of our hearts.
King?
Yes, Lieutenant?
I don't feel so good. Every breath feels like the last. But we're still alive. While there's life, there's hope.
Some hope. Two men trapped in a cabin full of air and a sinking ship 50 feet underwater. Who's going to come by and rescue us?
You never can tell.
What was that? What's that?
Cargo shifting. Bulkhead's giving way, maybe. Feel the ship move? We're rolling to a different angle now.
What was that?
The ship unjammed the cabin door. It just swung open.
Using my cigarette lighter for light, I explored. Just a few feet below us was the water, black and rippling a little as the ship shifted with the movement of the cargo. Up ahead were a couple of cabins I could enter, and a heavy door that I didn't dare open lest I let the air out. I found a jug of water and an iron rod I could use as a crowbar, and I got the lieutenant from under the fallen bunks and gave him some water. It was all I could do.
Thanks, King. But I guess pretty soon you'll have a little more air for yourself.
What do you mean?
I'm dying, I can tell.
Look, it was you who just said while there's life, there's hope.
Just whistling in the dark.
Here goes the cargo again.
You feel the ship shift? We're carrying bauxite ore from Brazil. It slides easily. Let's slant.
There it is again. The whole ship's vibrating.
My guess is some of the hull plates near the bow have been ripped open. The ore is pouring out of the holes into the sea.
It stopped.
And we're moving. Listen. It's air.
Air bubbling out?
Or in. We're moving. We're going up. Feel that jerk?
Why? What's happened?
We've lost thousands of tons of ore. Ship's lighter. The trapped air is taking us up.
You think we'll reach the surface?
I don't know. We got the porthole.
The water seems to be getting lighter.
Listen, if the ship reaches the surface,
yeah,
we only stay a few seconds, then dive to the bottom. You won't have much time to get out.
You mean we won't? Come on, I'm taking you up to the deck. With Sanders on my back, I pulled myself inch by inch up the steeply sloping corridor. I could feel the ship jerking and shuddering as we rose. The sound of water and air bubbling grew louder. I reached the companionway. Suddenly, the ship jerked and plunged, throwing us against the wall. With a tremendous splash, it came almost level in the water. We were on the surface. I dragged Lieutenant Sanders up the rest of the way and kicked open the door. The ship was still rolling. There was a breeze in my face. I was almost blinded by the sun in my nose. We made it. Did you ever expect to see sunshine again?
Make it fast. It may go under any second.
I'll make it fast. There's a life raft. I have to get the lightning gun tied.
Hurry, man. Hurry.
Come on. These lightnings are half untied. They'll be working them earlier. There. Now, I'll let you slide down into the water. There, that does it. Now we can get off this ship, Lieutenant. Can you? Lieutenant.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense. Next time you refresh, enjoy a frosty, ice-cold Pepsi-Cola.
Sociability, Charlie.
All right, Kay, how's this? Pepsi is light, refreshes without filling,
You like to refresh. Have a Pepsi right now.
We'll offer it to everybody, Charlie.
I will. Enjoy Pepsi at the fountain. It's delicious at home, too. Have one at lunch. Or with a snack.
Charlie.
At the beach or at dinner. Wherever you go, wherever you're thirsty, Pepsi is there.
It's here, too, in our Be Sociable song. Be sociable, mama. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay up and stay up and air. Be sociable, have a Pepsi.
For the weekend, have plenty of Pepsi around. Pick up an extra carton today. CK, I'm sociable.
With Pepsi, everyone is.
Lieutenant lay looking up at the sky, his eyes wide open. But he was dead. I helped myself to the money in his wallet and the passport. I wouldn't meet them where he was going. Then I slid down to the life raft and began paddling away. 10 minutes later, the Port Royal slid under for good. I was alone on a calm sea with nothing in sight but sky and air. Two days later, I drifted onto a large island and burned the life raft and started walking. In a few miles, I found a native village. I was on the island of Great Inagua, some 100 miles northeast of Cuba. I bought passage on a fishing boat to Cuba, and 2 weeks later, I managed to slip into Miami. Without even thinking about it, I headed for New York by bus. When I got there, I phoned Julia.
Wentworth residence.
My name is Riker, Charles Riker, and I'd like to speak to Mrs. Wentworth. Mrs. Julia Wentworth, please.
I'm sorry, sir, but that's impossible.
But it's very important. If you'll give her my name, it'll...
Haven't you seen the paper, sir?
Papers?
Yes, sir. Mr. and Mrs. Wentworth were in an automobile accident last night. Both are in critical condition.
Julia hurt?
Yes, sir.
What hospital?
General Hospital, sir.
I'm sorry, sir, but you can't go in that room.
I have to see Mrs. Wentworth. I'm a personal friend.
I'm sorry, no one can see her. Mrs. Wentworth is on the critical list.
Please, just for a minute.
It's really quite impossible.
But I've got to see her. Talk to her.
She's been unconscious for hours. Now, I'll have to ask you to leave.
But when she regains consciousness, can I see her then?
Only if you're a member of her immediate...
As I left the hospital, I remember that once Julia had said that John Werby was the family lawyer. I had to see her, and he could arrange it. I found his office in the phone book and went there, and an hour later got to see him.
You say your name is King? Lawrence King?
Yes, Mr. Werby. Julia probably never mentioned me to you, but you may know that we were once married.
Oh, yes, I know. In fact, I know your name very well. But I can't get over you being alive. Both you and Sanders were reported dead. Survivors saw the ship go down.
Yeah, it came up again. I just assumed everybody thought I was dead. Mr. Werby, I have to see Julia. I must see her. If only to let her know that I'm still alive.
I'm very sorry, Mr. King.
Very sorry.
Both Mr. and Mrs. Wentworth are dead.
No. No.
He died an hour ago. She half an hour.
She was dying while I was in there in the hospital.
I'm afraid so.
Julia dead. Can't believe it.
Believe me, I sympathize fully. Mr. King.
Yes.
The fact that Mrs. Wentworth lived half an hour longer than her husband is very important to you.
I don't see how.
Mr. Wentworth's entire estate went to Mrs. Wentworth, almost $4 million.
Oh, what does it matter? She's dead.
It matters a great deal. If Mrs. Wentworth had died first, her husband's estate would have gone to charity. Instead, it goes to her. She left a will. In that will, she leaves her estate to you.
To me?
Yes, almost $4 million. Less inheritance taxes, of course.
That's rather funny.
I'm afraid I don't see anything amusing.
Aren't you forgetting that I'm dead? I went down to Port Royal. There were witnesses.
It will be a simple matter to establish the fact you're still alive.
And once it's established, I'll go to prison as a four-time loser. which means a life sentence. Yes, I'd forgotten that. I can do one of two things. I can walk out of here, disappear, and go on living as Charles Riker and let the police think I'm dead. Or I can claim the estate, become the richest man in Sing Sing. Quite a choice, isn't it?
Yes, a rather difficult choice. Which will it be, Mr. King?
Which will it be? That's a good question, isn't it? A very good question. I've been thinking about it for quite a while, and I still haven't come up with the answer. If it was you, what would your choice be?
In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of suspense. Heard in tonight's story were Kevin McCarthy as Larry, Rebecca Sand as Julia, and Sam Gray as Sanders. Also included in the cast were Joseph Boland, Guy Rett, Ruth Tobin, and Richard Kendrick. Listen again next week when we return with Out the Window by William N. Robeson, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. The latest news follows, then Have Gun Will Travel on CBS Radio.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from May 15, 1960 on CBS, featuring the second of several scripts on the series by author Robert A. Arthur, a well-regarded and prolific writer in the business during radio's yesteryear. He headed up the writing team along with partner David Kogan on the Mysterious Traveler series where the story we just heard first appeared. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, and now we hear Frank Lovejoy as reporter Randy Stone on Nightbeat. This NBC broadcast first heard on May 1st, 1952.
Wheaties, Big Parade! The makers of America's favorite whole wheat flakes, Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, invite you to Wheaties, Big Parade, a thrilling procession of radio's greatest summer entertainment programs. Yours for the listening on NBC. On stage tonight from Hollywood, the first of 65 exciting half-hour presentations. Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. My stories start in many different ways. This one began with a question and ended when the secret locked in a man's mind brought sudden death.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. America's favorite whole wheat flake. That's an honest description of Wheaties in five well-chosen words. But it really doesn't begin to tell you how Wheaties got to be that way. And if I expect you to pull up a bowl and spoon to a box of Wheaties tomorrow morning, there are at least two reasons I think I ought to mention. First of all, Wheaties taste good. They taste mighty good. Either plain with a little milk or cream, or with your favorite fruit sprinkled on top. They're crisp, delicate, flavorful flakes. Good right down to the bottom of the bowl. And secondly, good tasting as Wheaties are, they always remember to be good for you, too. I could tell you all the vitamins and minerals Wheaties contain, but why don't I just say Wheaties are 100% whole wheat flakes? That says more than a lot of fancy words. It's really amazing
that anything that tastes as good as Wheaties can be so good for you. But it's true. Try Wheaties, America's favorite whole wheat flakes, next time you're up before breakfast.
Tonight I had another story to write. Find it somewhere in the 3,000 square miles of Chicago, among the people who are Chicago. People. Ever get the feeling you'd like to forget that word? Close a mental door, snap a psychic lock, and boom, you're alone? Oh, can't do it, pal, because maybe you're people, too. So tonight I watched them again. I wandered south on Western Avenue, crossed Addison, and there was Riverview Park. I walked around there, watching the people hurry themselves from one thing to another, each one trying to catch up with a couple of hours of fun. And then I saw a sign that read, Mentolo, the marvel of the age, knows everything. Admission, 25 cents. Okay, I'm a sucker for any man who knows everything and freely admits it. You might even know what makes the world tick, like a time bomb. That'd be worth 2 bits of anybody's money. I went in. Mentolo was in the middle of his act.
Battle of Waterloo proper was begun at 11:30 a.m. on June the 17th, 1815. The battle went through 5 distinct phases until the French were routed.
Is that right, lady?
Well, yes, it is.
It sure is. Now, who's next? Who has the next question? You, sir. You just came in. You seem a little skeptical.
Are you talking to me?
I am, sir. Maybe you'd like to ask Mentolo a question.
Oh, all right. What's the temperature of the sun?
Mentolo, the gentleman thinks he stumped you.
The temperature of the visible surface of the sun is about 6,000 degrees centigrade. The interior temperature is estimated at approximately 20 million degrees centigrade.
Is that correct, sir?
I'll take his word for it.
And you can, sir. Now, who's next?
I got a question.
Very good. Ask it.
Mentolo.
Yes?
What happened? What happened to you on the 15th of last month?
What happened? The 15th?
Yeah, the 15th.
Mentolo.
15th. Make him get out of here. Get him away.
That's all for this show. That's all.
He's back there.
Here up. Okay, everything's all right. Mentolo, come on, let's get out of here.
It happened again, Phil. Again?
You want a doctor?
Huh? Now, look, Mr. Rice, said everybody clear out.
Yes, I know, but this man collapsed. He looks pretty beat.
I said get out.
Okay.
And make it fast.
Okay.
Real fast.
So I made it real fast, like the man said. But as I walked through the carnival grounds, that bird brain of mine that just won't let me grow old gracefully started working overtime. Why did Mentolo do a nosedive when that question was asked? What happened to him on the 15th of last month? Listen tomorrow at the very same time and just plain stone will tell you all about it. But then, just as I'd reached the edge of the carnival grounds, a voice pushed its way through my thoughts.
Test your eye and your aim, folks. Knock down the dust.
It was the man who'd asked the question. I walked over to the shooting gallery and picked up one of the rifles.
I say here you are, mister. Test your eye and your aim.
Why, sure. Thank you.
Well, that was close, pretty close.
I'll try to do better.
Ah, just a little more practice, that's all. A little practice.
Yeah, like everything else.
Uh-huh. Well, that's better.
By the way, what happened to you on the 15th of last month?
I take your shots and beat it.
Why did you ask that question?
Give me the rifle, mister.
I got 5 more shots coming.
Not tonight. Give me it.
I pays my quarter. It takes my shot.
I said hand me the rifle.
Okay, here.
You want to see something? Watch.
Well, with bullets or words, the man's good.
You ain't a carny man.
No?
No. But you're awful curious.
That's an old family failing and an occupational hazard.
Uh-huh.
Why did you ask Mentolo that question? Did you know how it would affect him?
You know, mister, a couple of months back, a guy picks up one of these rifles. He don't know nothing about guns, see? He gets careless and the gun goes off. At him. He's dead. Accident.
You know, Pal, you have a strange oblique way of making me feel uncomfortable. I see what you mean.
Uh-huh. Now you're hitting the bullseye. So long, mister.
Okay, twice I got curious, twice I drew blanks. I thought about it some more and then decided to pass it up in favor of the cotton candy. And then I saw Mentolo. He was walking down the midway, but like a man in a trance. There was something about him that screamed, "I need help." His little figure seemed odd, incongruous against the laughing, hurrying people. I followed him, wondering. And then he stopped in front of the roller coaster. For a moment he watched it, and then, as if suddenly making up his mind, he headed for the ticket booth. That didn't figure, so I bought a ticket, too, and followed him to the loading platform.
Tickets for the next ride, please. Tickets for the next ride.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you. Tickets for the next ride. Tickets for the next ride, please.
I got in the car directly behind Mentolo. That dazed, bewildered expression was still on his face. His hands gripped the side of the car. He half rose in his seat as though he were going to leave, but he sat down again. And then...
All right. It's 200 feet up. Lock your safety bars.
We started up the long incline toward the top of the 200-foot grade. I kept my eyes on Mentolo. He gripped the safety bar in front of him until his knuckles whitened under the pressure. A couple of kids behind me began to rip me.
Geez, hi. I'm getting scared.
Hey, mister, you gotta have a girl with you.
I did, but I left her in the funhouse.
Oh, what a square she must be.
Yes.
Hey, if you get scared, mister, hold on to me.
I'll keep that in mind.
Hey, baby, I paid four fits for this. Let him grab his own cookie. Hey, watch it. We're going over.
Here we go!
And then it happened. He started down the almost perpendicular drop. Mentolo stood up. Mentolo!
Let me go! Let me go!
Mentolo struggled to his feet, almost dragged me out of my seat with the safety bar for me. I held him while we hurtled down the long drop and finally hit the bottom. Then Mentolo stopped struggling to get free. He went limp and sagged back into his seat.
Why did you stop me? I've got to kill myself.
Well, he almost did, and me with him. My arms ached from the effort of holding him down. But the ride was finally over. I got him off and away. He let me lead him like a child out of the park and to his chief hotel room on the north side. I told him who I was and then waited until he spoke.
Why didn't you let me do it?
Well, I'm just an old busybody. How about some coffee?
No, nothing. Just leave me alone, please.
Just a minute, I saw your act tonight. I heard the question that sent you off.
It's always someone different who asks it. Never the same person twice.
Have you ever got hold of the person who asks it?
No. I was afraid to.
What did happen to you on the 15th of last month?
I don't know. Something tells me that I must not remember. I must not.
Your act is legitimate, isn't it? Yeah, no fake, you know, no shills to ask questions you're sure to know the answer to.
I have a photographic memory, Mr. Stone. I never forget anything.
Yet you've forgotten one day of your life.
Yes. You don't believe it, do you?
Oh, yes, I do. But why did you try to kill yourself?
Because I know that if I do remember, I wouldn't be able to stand it.
Don't you have any clue at all?
Two things. Two things that mean nothing.
Well, maybe they do. What are they?
It's just streamers in the sky and the name Helene.
Streamers in the sky and Helene. Who is Helene?
I don't know anybody by that name. I don't. I tell you, I don't.
All right. Now take it easy, Mentolo.
Oh, get out and leave me alone. Get out.
Yeah. Get out and leave him alone.
Phil.
Well, my friend the Barker, hello.
What are you doing here?
I brought Mentolo home after he tried to kill himself.
What? Mentolo. You all right?
I'm all right, Phil, but I don't want to remember.
Look, Phil, for what it's worth, he's sick. He's got to see a doctor.
No, Phil, get him out of here.
Oh, miss.
Mister, get out.
But this man is...
Get out and don't come back. Because if you do anything that hurts Mentolo, I'll kill you.
General Mills is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
If someone asked you to describe a bowl of Wheaties topped with fruit and swimming in thick, rich cream, you couldn't do better than to say,
Breakfast of Champions, because that's a fact. A lot of champions in the sports world really go for Wheaties. They like the way Wheaties taste, and they admire the solid nourishment Wheaties has to offer. Finding a breakfast cereal that's good and good for you is just as much of a bargain to a baseball champion as it is to anyone else. For example, the world's champion New York Yankees have a sparkling third baseman named Bobby Brown. He eats Wheaties. He's been eating Wheaties for 10 years. He must know what he's talking about when he says this. You can put me down for milk, fruit, and Wheaties almost any day of the year. Those whole wheat flakes taste swell and hand you lots of good nourishment, too. I'd recommend Wheaties to anyone, anytime. Well, I don't suppose you'll be fielding any hot grounders along the third baseline anytime soon, but before you know it, you'll be eating breakfast again. And we feel you're entitled to champion nourishment just as much as any player in the New York Yankee lineup. Have yourself a bowl of Wheaties, won't you? Wheaties, breakfast of champions. And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
Like I said before, sometimes you'd like to seal off the rest of the world and forget it. Let 1,000 people die in a flood, we click our tongues and say, how terrible. And that's as far as it goes. But let one kid scratch himself on a nail and 87 people come running with the iodine. The human reality of what happens to a lot of people at once is too big for us. But what happens to one individual is something each of us can get hold of. I don't know, maybe that's what sent me to a friend of mine, a psychiatrist whom I dragged out of bed.
But, Randy, what concern is mental all of yours?
Oh, I don't know, Ken. Why'd you become a psychiatrist?
Well, I see what you mean.
Okay, you see what I mean. Now, what gives with mental, though?
Self-protection. His mind is protecting him. Whatever happened on the 15th of last month is suppressed. The memory is horrible enough to force a complete blackout.
Yeah, but he remembers two things, Ken. Streamers in the sky and the name Helena. What do the streamers mean?
Almost anything. This guy's symbol for something else.
Yeah, he tried to kill himself tonight. Will he try it again?
It's likely.
Well, what'll set him off again?
Hard telling. Question, object, anything. Was Mentolo upset when you left him?
Upset? He was practically hysterical.
I'd better go with you.
Oh, you're worried too, huh?
I'd feel better if I saw him. Let's go.
Here's the room. It's right here, 612.
Randy, try the door.
Open.
You know where the light is?
I think I saw a switch by the door.
Randy!
Mentolo.
Don't try to unfasten that buckle. Cut the belt.
Lift him, hurry.
All right. Cut that belt. Hurry up, Randy.
Is he alive?
I think so. All right.
Easy, Kent.
Pulse is still strong. He couldn't have been hanging more than a few seconds before we came in.
Poor little devil, Ken.
Look, Randy.
What?
There's something clutched in his hand.
But, why, yes, that's a key. That's an old-fashioned house key. Now, why?
I don't know.
Well, what's your guess?
It's hard telling, Randy, but I do know this. He's no longer responsible for his actions.
Well, then the next time he tries anything like this, maybe nobody will be around to stop it. Ken, is there anything that we can do? Is there anything you can do?
It's up to him, Randy, but... Let's get him to my office. We'll see what we can do there.
Feeling better, Mentolo?
Yes, thank you.
You know where you are?
No. Where's Phil?
Oh, you're Barker? I don't know. Now, listen to me, Mentolo. You tried to hang yourself. Do you remember that?
Yes. After Phil left, I felt so hopeless.
You had this in your hand, this key. Look at it.
I found it in my pocket, and I knew I had to kill myself.
Is it your key? Do you remember what it's for?
No.
He won't remember that, Randy.
Oh.
Well, who are you?
He's a friend of mine, and he's a doctor, Mentolo.
Well, I don't want any...
Now, look, twice tonight you tried to kill yourself. Once is enough to call in the police.
No.
Oh, don't worry. That's not what we want to do.
I want to help you, and the doctor wants to help you. Please believe it.
No one can help me because I can't remember, and I must not remember.
The police will ask questions when they learn you tried to kill yourself.
But it's no business of theirs or yours. Why don't you leave me alone? Why do you care?
Oh, that's the same old question asked the same old way, and this time I've run out of answers. Make up one of your own. I don't know.
I'm sorry, and I believe you do want to help.
Yes, yes, we do. Now, look, there'll be no need to call in the police if you'll let us help you. You're sick. Do you know that? You're sick.
Let us help you.
All right.
Good. Now, you trust Mr. Stone, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right. You're going to sleep. When you feel this hypodermic needle, start counting backward from 100. Just a little sting, then start counting backward from 100. Now.
Mr. Stone.
What, Mendelo?
You stay near.
Oh, yes, I'll stay.
Start counting. 99.
98.
95. 90. He knows your voice, Randy. He trusts you. You ask the questions.
Me, is it all right? Mantello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's the 15th of last month.
The 15th of last month. Streamers in the sky.
What streamers? What are they? Where are they?
The aurora borealis.
The northern lights?
Yes. Aurora. I went to Aurora.
Aurora, Illinois?
Yes. I was there.
Now, you're in Aurora. Where did you go there?
The house. Yes, I've got to open the door. The key.
Here. Here's the key.
Unlock the door. She's going to be here. Helene.
Who is Helene?
I love her. She loves me. Yes, the room. The room.
All right. Now you're in the room. What did you do?
I waited. Waited for her. She came in. And then I...
Mantello.
Oh, Helene. Helene.
Ken, is he all right?
Yes.
We still don't know what happened.
There's one way to find out, Randy.
What, find the house in Aurora and take him there?
That's it. What we've done here is bring him to recall that far. Now it's a question of bringing back the whole thing, bit by bit.
Ken didn't go along. Mentolo didn't want him to. It wasn't a long drive in miles. I watched Mentolo when I could. His face was contorted in an agony of effort as we drove through Aurora slowly, looking for one street, one house. Then...
That house.
But it's all boarded up. Are you sure, Mentolo?
It's that house.
All right. The house set back from the street. The only light came from a street lamp half a block away. Mentolo walked slowly ahead of me, up the walk toward the porch, then up the porch stairs. Open the door.
Locked. It was locked that day, too.
Well, unlock it. You got the key. Where's the light switch?
No light.
All right. We'll use the flashlight. Now, go ahead, Mentolo. Go ahead. Now, there's no furniture here, Mentolo. This house is vacant.
But this is her house. I know. There were three of us here. Three. This is the room.
Go on. Mentolo, think. Well, you've got to think. It's the only way you'll remember what happened. It's the only way you'll find out what's torturing you.
She's here. She came to me in this room.
Elaine came to you here?
Because she loved me.
Where is she now?
Our clothes. In this closet.
Mentolo walked to the closet, opened it. A row of dresses hung there. A faint odor of perfume drifted through the room. For a moment, Mentolo stood there, and he started toward a door. Mentolo, where are you going?
I know. The basement.
Wait for me.
Down there.
No one here, Mentolo. No one at all. The basement's empty.
Not empty. She. Under the earth where I put her. Under the earth.
Get it out. Come on, get a hold of yourself. What are you talking about?
I killed her. She came to me because we loved each other. I was holding her in my arms when I killed her. Now she's down here. Under our feet. I killed her.
Who was she?
I killed her.
You're satisfied now? You're satisfied?
Bill.
What are you doing here?
You had to stick your nose in. You had to make him tell, didn't you?
Mentolo, are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah, he's sure. And so am I, because I helped him put her here. He'd never known if you didn't make him remember.
Who was Helene?
You're never going to know.
Helene.
You had to go and make him remember. It was all over. Nobody would have known because we traveled with the yak.
Yes, but somebody did know. Because somebody asked him tonight what happened on the 15th. Somebody always asked that question. Why? And who was Helene?
Helene was his wife.
What?
He was jealous because she never loved him. She loved me.
Then how could you have killed her, Mentolo? Listen to me. You only think you killed her. Because if she hadn't come here, she wouldn't have been killed. You blamed yourself. That's what it was. And then you forgot. The shock made you forget.
Don't listen to her, Mentolo. Don't listen.
I remember now. I remember. You killed her. Made me believe.
But you're not going to tell anybody else about it. Both of you are going to stay here.
I'm not afraid anymore, Phil. Because I know now I didn't kill her. You did, Phil.
Mentolo went toward Phil. Phil had a gun pointed at him. I jumped back, turned off the flashlight. For a moment, there wasn't a sound. Then.
Mentolo. Where are you? Mentolo.
Wait, Mentolo. Don't move. You hear me? Don't move.
Mentolo. Don't. Mentolo!
Helene is here, Phil. Down here.
Shut up!
Mentolo.
I'm all right.
Good. Phil. What's it going to be now?
Get me out of here! Away from her! Philip! Get me out of here!
Well, it's almost dawn now. I can go home to my little trundle bed and sleep the day away. Yo-ho-ho, the reporter's life for me, oh sure. But anyhow, I got my story. Two men, one whose feelings of guilt forced him to believe he killed the woman he loved, and another man whose feelings of guilt made him a gibbering coward. But where's the moral? That someone always pays for a crime? Sure, but who is guilty? Maybe we should say, what is guilty? What's in that space above our eyes that makes us act the way we do? That makes us people? To louse up Shakespeare, there are more things in the darkness of the mind than are dreamed of in your philosophy, Mr. Stone. Oh, you can call me Randy, pal. Just call me Randy. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, first on the Wheaties Big Parade, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Here again is Frank Lovejoy.
Stepping out of the role of Randy Stone, I'd like to make a very important request of you and your family. Pick up the May issue of Reader's Digest and turn to page 73 and read the short article called, What Do You Eat for Breakfast? I was amazed to learn from this article how important a good breakfast is to the health and welfare of every one of us. And that means the health and welfare of our nation. To all the men who sell Wheaties, you, the sales force of more than 700 enterprising men of General Mills, and you, the hundreds of thousands of grocers who must meet the exacting needs of the American homemaker, to all of you, I want to say that I'm mighty proud to be back on your team again. We have a big job to do. Together, we can help more families to help themselves by eating a good, substantial breakfast, one built around Wheaties as breakfast of champions. As we do this, we can take pride in the fact that we are making a real contribution to the health and welfare of our nation. Good night, and thank you.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's script was written by Russell Hughes, with music by Frank Worth. The part of Mentolo was played by Ben Wright. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. And now, on Wednesday night, listen to Brian Donlevy in Dangerous Assignment on the Wheaties Big Parade. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood.
Night Beat on Tuned to Yesterday from May 1st, 1952 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.